Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warez.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Kapp.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Klink.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's a Need to Know podcast. All thanks to the CIA Ops patron community. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, N2K Podcast, and online at ciaops.podbean.com.
Welcome back to the Need to Know podcast. It's been a little while since we've done an episode, so I thought I'd bring back our special guest. Welcome back, Brenton Johnson. Welcome.
Oh, it's good to be back, Robert. People are probably starting the rumor mill around me getting axed.
There's no rumors. You are sacked. See ya. Last episode.
That's all right. Make the most of it, people. Make sure you listen in.
That's right. Exactly. Vote up number two ex-co-host. So what have you been doing in the interim since we have spoken last time?
I've moved office. I've hired someone. I've got, I've got lots of things going on at the moment. I had a listener reach out on LinkedIn and say that he was really enjoying the podcast and he got a lot out of it, which was really good. So you know who you are, and thank you, dear listener.
It's glad to see that your mum listens too.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's like someone's got to like it. They always say, I'm the star of the show, Robert.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. And those people don't last long.
All jokes aside, just being, fairly occupied, actually. How about yourself?
Yeah, been very busy, a lot of traveling, and that sort of has come to a bit of a stark ending thanks to the coronavirus, but spent a lot of time traveling around Australia doing a number of sessions for distributors, and also managed to squeeze in a trip to lovely downtown Copenhagen to Microsoft Ignite, the tour over there, do two presentations for that, and then head back here, and then did a couple more sessions in Brisbane and Perth, and now back finally in Sydney, sleeping in my own bed. And interestingly, they have cancelled the MVP summit, which I was going to at the end of this week. So that has been cancelled because of the coronavirus. So now I have a nice 3-week gap or so in my calendar for people to fill up. So again, this coronavirus, I think many people would say that perhaps it's being blown out of proportion. It doesn't really seem to matter because it's still getting blown out of proportion. What's your take on all of this that we're seeing out there in the news?
I think when we look at the actual mortality rates, it's not a big deal. We're talking a 2% mortality rate. The challenge really is resources. So if we have a nurse that presents with coronavirus or symptoms of coronavirus, might not even have it, that nurse can't work for 2 weeks, right? And they might shut down the ward and they might do that. And then you've got a whole bunch of hundreds of people who come in saying, oh, I think I'm going to die from coronavirus. And they're, 25-year-old, super fit people. They're not going to die from coronavirus. They're taking up resources in the hospital. So I was talking to a customer quite extensively about this, and she's in the medical field. And they asked her, like, how are you going to respond to a coronavirus? And they shut down the whole hospital and you can't come in. And she said, oh, we're done. We're sorted. 12 months ago, we would have been in a bit of strife, but we've moved to modern workplace now. So half the fleet are laptops now. Everyone runs out of the cloud. Everyone has stuff in SharePoint. Everyone can communicate on Teams. Our infrastructure is completely separate to the hospital. If coronavirus comes through, our business keeps going. The hospital might be shut down, but, we won't be affected all that much. And we could probably find some BYOD devices and hook people up at home if we really need to. We can do, meetings on Teams. Everyone's sort of skilled up around that. So I think this is interesting stuff that we should be really talking about with people is, if a coronavirus comes through and the city goes into a lockdown of sorts, You know, can you offer that flexibility, that work from home, or are you trying to set up VPNs at the last minute to get people in the office and there's no resources because every customer needs them at the same time and all of this sort of stuff? So no, I think it'll be quite interesting to see what happens when it finally hits us in any meaningful way.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that. Like I said, Microsoft has done a couple of announcements. So it's giving away, for example, it's E1 plan plus free Teams, so you can get 6 months free subscription to an E1 plan and also to Teams. A couple of blog posts floating around, and we'll put one of those in the show notes so you can have a read of that. But it is an opportunity. I think that I wrote a blog post recently saying, look, we see this sort of end of the world scenario happen roughly every 10 years. So roughly 10 years ago was the GFC. You know, the world was going to end and markets were tumbling to record lows. I think that if you are a smart operator, you basically look at that, make sure you've got your own house in order as best you can, and then look for the opportunity. So I see that there are lots and lots of opportunities. Again, if you have your house in order, you can basically, you know, look at the stock market and say, this is a bargain, for example. I can go in and buy shares now that as you know, cheaper than they have been for 10 years. Again, looking forward to, you know, how this shakes out. Now, in the short term, we would expect to see probably still on the rise. I'm expecting probably that Microsoft Build, which is their developer conference, will probably be cancelled. That is in May, and Seattle has declared a state of emergency because they've had a number of deaths over there in that location. It'll be very interesting to see. The one we're waiting on is Inspire. So there's a group of patrons that are aiming to go together to Microsoft Inspire, which is in Las Vegas in July. Las Vegas being a little bit warmer, and that's something the virus doesn't particularly like. We will wait and see. Tickets go on sale on the 23rd of March, which is sort of next week-ish or the week after. Whether Microsoft will offer it or pull the plug on the conference, we will see. And then, of course, the really big one will be Ignite in September in New Orleans. So will Microsoft pull the plug on that? I would say at this point it's probably a 50-50 chance that Microsoft will, just to be on the safe side. But again, that's a huge, you know, basically disappointment for many people who've lined up to go to the conferences. But when you look at all the people coming from all over the world, it's probably the right thing, I think, to do at this point in time, at least until we've got a better picture. So we'll see. They pulled the pin on a lot of Microsoft Ignite, the tour conferences, so Zurich, Hong Kong, Shanghai, Taipei, Singapore, they've all been cancelled. We wait with bated breath to see what happens with the big US conferences. So, again, I would suggest to people that, you know, again, you need to be a bit more aware, but there are lots and lots of opportunities out there to take up. And like I said, remote working and the ability to use things like the cloud are going to make it easier for people to work from home. I'm sure that, again, my where I am now, again, that gives me that isolation. I think that's a good thing. We'll see how that goes, even in the SMBs. So we'll wait and see what that brings, eh, Breton?
Yeah, I think so. I think the main thing is that people don't overreact, and that they have a sensible conversation with their customers around what the actual fallout of this stuff might be. You know, it's going to be different on different type of industries, but. For the most part, I can't see it being a huge concern if you're outside of those particular industries who are going to be hardest hit. But you may need to work from home. You may need to do this. You may need to do that. Schools may be shut down. Those sorts of things that could indeed happen. So it'd be good to have a bit of a think about it and start having some conversations in a constructive way, not in a the world is ending, media frenzy, people dying sort of way, more in the, hey, this is what your options are if these sorts of.
So what are you saying, Brenton, that we don't read social media?
Yeah, I'd turn that off, I reckon. Don't read the news, it's like if you believed everything, you would not leave the house. You'd be buying toilet paper like, oh, wait.
Yeah, that's another interesting thing. But we're not here to talk about the coronavirus. I'm sure we could fill a whole episode on the interesting human reactions to the pandemic, as we're saying. So we'll wait and see. Hopefully, fingers crossed, that it does clear itself up. Anybody who's been affected, we wish them all the best, and hopefully they're able to recover. And again, we encourage people to take rational steps. And I think the biggest thing that I've heard that I've now adopted is just washing your hands on a more regular basis, being a bit more careful about touching your face as well. So see how we go with that. But the big benefit, again, is going to be a lot of people now will be forced or encouraged, let's say, to work from home. And the Microsoft Cloud is going to give them that ability. So why don't we focus on some good news? What good news have you got to give us from the Microsoft Cloud, Brenton?
Good news, good news. Well, Yammer is good news. So Yammer is now releasing what we call a native mode, which for all new Office 365 tenants from nowish will all have this. So for those who don't know the history of Yammer, Yammer was bought by Microsoft, and it's been sort of the ugly duckling of the Microsoft family. It hasn't really integrated properly with everything the same way that Teams does. And they've been building it in and building it in and building it in and getting it better and better and better, but it's always felt a little bit outside of the ecosystem. With this native mode, it's going to be much, much better. So, you know, every Yammer group will have a behind it. All the files will be in SharePoint. All of this stuff will be fully integrated now, and it will be just like every other Office 365 app in the stack. So that's really cool. Do you have any thoughts on this, Robert?
I think Yammer, apparently 2020 is the year of Yammer, and it's going to undergo a complete facelift. So it's going to begin to look much more like SharePoint, Planner and the rest. You're right, the interface hasn't changed in a long period of time. I think that the functionality has always been there of benefit to people. But again, the idea is that we want to make it look more like the rest of the suite. So that's going to happen later this year. Can't wait for that. The other thing we'll see, which I think is a big positive, we'll now see an integration button inside Teams. So when you open your Teams app, you'll see a little button there that will allow you to jump straight into Yammer. And I assume that's going to show you inside the Teams app. Now, that's going to be very interesting because we have Teams for conversation. We have Kaizala for conversations. We have now Yammer as well for conversations. Where does that fit? How does that work? How does that integrate? That will be very interesting. Now, I do see a place for Yammer. There are some things that Yammer can do well. I think that Yammer works well as a pure conversation or pure chat medium. The other thing that I really like about Yammer that Teams doesn't yet support is hashtags. So what you can do in Yammer is put a hashtag in for hash help me or something, and then that actually becomes a hyperlink you can click on, and you can see all the other hashtag mentions throughout conversation. So is that coming to Teams? I don't know. We'll wait and see. But it will be good to get Teams fully integrated inside the Teams experience and, again, have it modernized, look and feel, and, again, I suppose, fluid design as well. So I think that will be good news, and hopefully that refresh will allow more people to lift their interest in Yammer, because I think it's a very good product. It works really well when used correctly. And against what many people would say, it's not – to my knowledge, anyways, dying or being cancelled by Microsoft. Again, it just needs a bit of a refresh to move on. Now, one of the other things I thought that was very interesting, and I'd like to hear your opinion on this, because I do have opinion, unsurprisingly, on this, is that Microsoft's new cloud printing service moves closer to release. So Microsoft now has a native cloud printing service available with its offerings currently in preview, as mentioned, but we should expect to see it roll out shortly to all tenants. What's your thought on this concept of Microsoft doing cloud printing now?
Oh, look, I'm well aware of your opinion on it, Robert. This is something you've been waiting for a long time. I was actually having a chat to one of the co-founders of Papercut today, and now he works for a different company, and they were talking about their cloud print product having something like 50,000 print drivers in it. And one of their biggest, drivers that they look after, or the number of printers they look after, was label printers, which I thought was particularly interesting. So they said, yeah, our number one amount of printers is label printers. And I just had never thought that would be the case. We spoke briefly about this. It's actually quite a difficult problem to solve. I think now, you know, the one that they've got there, they're talking about if you have an enterprise subscription, an enterprise Windows, then you can go into the preview. I think it's a little bit far away, but with the way Microsoft can just go to a HP and go, look, HP, our partner that we spend billions of dollars together with, can you now build this into the printer and standardize it all around the Microsoft Universal Print driver? I think that's just going to completely change the game, but I can't see it happening overnight. I can see a lot of third-party platforms being in the middle for a long time, as they do with voice and other parts of things. But, you know, in the long term, the 10 to 20 year plan, if we can standardize this and just have a standard format, I could see, you know, a significant piece of the market shifting over to this because it's simple. You know, it's just a simple thing. And then there'll be specific use cases where you'll need third party software to come in and sort of fill the gaps. But if they can get this right, this is going to be just massive, I think, for the whole modern workplace story. How about yourself, Robert? What do you feel?
Well, I think at the end of the day, printing's been one of the services that have been trapped on-prem. I mean, we're supposed to have moved to a paperless office. We really haven't done that for a lot of people. So printing is a very dependent part of many businesses. So moving that, so when we typically move an Office 365 or Microsoft 365, printing gets left behind. How do we handle it? There are third-party options that can print, but an integrated solution that also supports things like Azure AD and reports into a console and does all sort of that, I think is a great step forward. And it's good to see an integrated solution from Microsoft. Again, it will go back to like on-prem. Yes, there were Microsoft options for generic Windows-style print servers that Microsoft did and did well, and there will still be the scope for third parties as well. So I think, to me, this is probably the last vestige of an excuse to stay on-prem. I think once we have a native cloud printing solution from Microsoft, then it's like, well, there is really no reason not to move your environment. Yes, you may make the choice, but I don't think there's anything that you can say is actually technically holding you back. So I see this as a big positive, again, for the move to the cloud, and I really don't see that there are any excuses anymore for organizations not to move to the cloud once this goes full GA and we've worked all of that out. So interested to see how it goes. We'll put the link in the show notes so people can go in and have a look. Now, speaking of some updates too, another one that I was really interested in was the new updates to the Microsoft Authenticator. Now, the Microsoft Authenticator typically allows you to put two-factor in and do MFA for your tenant and also for third-party apps as well. But they've added the ability in there to change your password, update your security info, and review recent activity. So they're bringing a lot of the stuff that is in a web console directly into the app. I think this is a really positive step forward for the Authenticator. It's beginning to show the differentiation that Microsoft is able to bring to its product versus some other third-party authenticators. So being the security whiz, what do you think? Brenton, is this a good move?
Yeah, look, it's, you know, I think this whole authentication piece is still very early days for most businesses. I don't think people have really got the mind shift out of perimeter defense style of everything's on-prem, we put a firewall around it. Oh, crap, now we have cloud stuff. Well, let's turn on multi-factor authentication. Okay, done. There's a whole piece around how are we going to make sure that that's the person who we think it is. There's quite a few approaches around biometrics and those sorts of things moving forward. But, you know, I think it's a developing space. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if this wasn't the first time we see a change like this. I think these are just a small part of a bigger change project as we move from that perimeter defense into that protecting the data and identifying the user.
Yeah, so it's good to see, again, that Microsoft isn't basically just sitting on his hands with this sort of software. It is improving, it is adding features, and I think that's going to give users more flexibility when it comes to and we hope to see more improvements added to the authenticator as it continues to roll out. Now, speaking of updates, Microsoft did release a very interesting post from two field service engineers, or premier field service engineers, about staying on top of Office 365 updates. We'll put the link in the show notes. A lot of this I use day in and day out. There's some great stuff in here, basically, looking at the Office 365 roadmap, RSS feeds, pulling, for example, the message center using something like PowerShell, really handy. You've got your new to Microsoft 365 videos. That's a regular thing for people to consume on YouTube. So there's a nice range of suggestions here of what you can do to keep up to date with everything happening Microsoft 365. I also like how they've sort of broken this up into, if you're a developer, look at these. If you're a consultant, look at these. If you're an admin, look at these sort of options. So we'll see where this goes. But that is probably one of the most common questions I get from IT pros, is how to stay up. Now, my answer obviously is to join the Patreon community, and you're always up to date that way. But this is a good blog post here to give you some of the techniques that I use myself if you want to go down that path of staying up to date. Have you had a chance to look at this one, Brenton?
Oh, yeah. It's a very comprehensive article. It's got some great images in there that you can use. I think, one of the big challenges with keeping on top of Microsoft is trying to find the stuff that's relevant. It might not be all that relevant to know about Dynamics 365 and all of this sort of stuff, but then understanding how the common data model works, understanding some basics around the Office 365 environment, and then trying to, having a DJ like Robert's kind of handy, where he can just say, all right, here's stuff that's actually relevant to my audience, because there's a lot of stuff in here. And that, I suppose that's the challenge, right? Like, we could cover probably another 10 to 15 news items a week on the podcast, but we have to sift through that and go, our audience isn't really interested in that. That doesn't affect our audience. That doesn't affect our audience. This is going to affect them in 3 years. We should definitely talk about that, but probably not as depth as this. So, certainly being a listener of the podcast is a great start. Being a patron is also a great start. If you want to be like Robert and know literally everything about the Microsoft 365 that you can fit into a 96-hour week of learning, then this is the document for you. But it is very segmented. It is very easy to follow, and it does have the recommended audiences for different things. So definitely worth checking out, even if you glance your eye over it. It should give you a bit more of an idea, and maybe you'll contribute some of these updates into the group yourself.
It gives you an idea of sort of the range of resources that are available: video, audio, RSS feeds. Again, different things work for different people. So, as Brenton mentioned, basically go through and have a look and see what works for you. Sign up to something, and it might make your life of keeping up with this environment a little bit easier. Now, another couple of things that I saw that probably worth mentioning here. Firstly, that the forms, Microsoft Forms, which allows you to do basic question and answer style processes, has now activity reports. So you can see who filled out the form, how long they took, all of that is now being surfaced inside activity reports in the Microsoft admin console. So again, that is nice and handy if you are a big user of forms and you want to get some sort of idea as to how your users are working with them. We've also got an interesting video here on detecting workplace harassment and responding. So part of this is that a lot of the communications today happen via chat or happen via potentially email. Maybe some of those are used unfortunately, for things like harassment or bullying or whatever. So Microsoft now has some tools that allow you to detect that, respond to that, and report on that, which can be very handy, again, in today's workforce environment. So again, have a look at these tools. We'll make sure that the links are in the show notes there. You've got a couple of items here, Brenton. Is there anything else that you wanted to mention?
I might just go back to that one a bit. I did listen to the mechanics episode. I've got the podcast now, so just listen to that. It's a lot easier than trying to get the video. And yeah, the level of liability that organizations are carrying around bullying and harassment, and the earlier you can get to it, the better. So if you can start identifying that Kathy is having a problem with Robert, and you can see that that's starting to get escalated, and you can step in and de-escalate that situation, it could potentially save you, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, like one of my mates is 30 grand in the hole, and with the lawyer already, and they're just at the start of it, you know. So if we can start using the technology to pick out those sorts of things, I would imagine, I'd be very surprised if a mid-market up customer wouldn't be very, very interested in something like that, because they see it as a huge liability and one that's very, very difficult to manage. So to have these tools is really, really cool. Really like the sorts of things. You know, it has privacy implications, but you know, they're looking at work email addresses. I think there's a fairly established, you know, code around your work email is, you know, pretty much on limits. You don't use it for personal use. It's that sort of stuff. So, yeah, quite cool. What else do you want to talk about, Robert?
Well, I think probably, again, we don't have a interview for this episode. Brenton's been slack, and that's why he's getting the chop, just if you were asking. So we need to basically sing and dance on the spot. And, of course, Brenton hasn't given us enough links to talk about, so it's down to Robert again to do all the hard work.
it's always down to Robert to do the hard work.
Well, that's right. I'm the host. I get to say, and I get to edit you out at any point in this conversation too. So, again, as many co-hosts have found, just deal with it. So I think that, again, the biggest impact we've talked about is going to be the effect of the coronavirus. How are we going to deal with this? Microsoft, again, is also ramping up some of its security. Now, these are going to be some challenges when you have people now working from home. And I see that's going to be a really big challenge, because people, you know, in the office, they can be made sure to an extent they're doing the right thing. But once they're out at home, again, their PC may not be as secure potentially as what you see in the office. How are we going to make sure all that works? How are we going to make sure that, you know, these accounts are secure, the PCs are secure, we've got the ability to prevent information, you know, being sent to wrong people or wrong locations or mixed in with consumer data. So as much as it's good to talk about, yes, working from home is the ability in the cloud, now we've got also this security challenge of looking after the information. So lots of challenges out there, I think, for people now and in the future, and how we deal with this. Remember also that Microsoft is looking to turn off things like legacy auth. That's going to happen basically in October, so that isn't too far away. The other thing we can probably talk about, I think, is the impact of some of the security requirements. So we've basically, the baseline security defaults have been removed from Azure AD, and they've been replaced with security defaults. Many partners are also now dealing with the fact they have to make sure MFA is on their tenant. So lots and lots of security requirements coming in play for end users and also partners. So have you managed to get your tenant all up to speed with the right security to make Microsoft happy that you're still a suitable partner?
Oh, yeah, mine was already up to date, so I didn't have to worry too much. I didn't have to do any singing and dancing. I did go into my tenant and turn on the security defaults, and my secure score dropped from 300 down to 150. But then I asked around, and apparently everyone's dropped from 300 to 150. I don't know what they changed in the back end or whatever. I don't really use Intune because I don't really have risks to manage when it's just me. I don't really need to device manage because, you know, I know I have a PIN code on stuff. I know, you know, I've already manually configured it all. So those sorts of things. But so I don't know. That probably affected my score. But yeah, look, it's really not hard, guys. Like, Microsoft's making it really easy. It is, you know, there is a process, and it is difficult doing it across 50 tenants. It is, you know, there are challenges, of course, but, you know, the users are quick to adopt. I found the Microsoft Authenticator And then going in and showing them the, what do you call it, like the sign in without passcode.
Mm-hmm.
You can just sign in with multi-factor.
Passwordless login.
That's it. That's what I was thinking. I've had that for ages, and now I'm sitting there showing customer, you know, the future is passwords aren't secure. I go through that spiel, Troy Hunt, blah, 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 science, et cetera. So how do you solve that? Well, you know, you use two other forms of identification. In this case, something you have, which is your phone, and something you are, which is your face. You do the thing, you turn it on. You got to turn it on because it's still in preview. You turn it on, you enroll the device. It enforces a PIN code. So you've got the something you know / something you are. I use Face ID, obviously, because I'm an Apple user. And yeah, that's pretty much it. And then any web browser you go to log in. Rather than having to type in a password where people always keep some stupid password, it just asks you to authenticate on your phone, which people go, oh, but when you actually look at what passwords people are picking and how they're doing it, it's not that big a deal. I believe it turns off things like legacy auth, but I don't know. I have all that turned off with the security defaults now, so I don't really have to worry about that anymore. But yeah, it's quite easy to get customers on board now. And you know, if they don't want to use the app because it's their personal phone and they don't want to install apps and they don't know their iCloud phone password or whatever, that's when you just switch over to SMS and they can use that. Because even SMS 2FA, although not the gold standard, is the, you know, 95% gold standard. SMS 2FA is not bad. It's just not quite as good as the Authenticator app. So, but it's still, you know, going to stop 99.99% of attacks or whatever Microsoft said a couple of months ago when they measured it all. So, you know, the adoption of this stuff is so much easier than what it used to be. People are used to it with their banks and all of that. Is that what you're finding too, Robert?
Well, I think, again, people are becoming used to it. I think that it's always a pain to move from an existing system or an existing way of work to a new way. But done correctly, which is the job of the MSP, to typically is to configure that to minimize that. So trusted IPs, passwordless login, you know, Azure AD joint machines does minimize that dramatically. And, again, that's available, just a little bit of setup to achieve that. And that does make things, you know, far more secure. So, again, having machines that are forced to have BitLocker, that are forced to have non-complex passwords, that are, forced to have complex passwords and forced to basically, you know, have good security practices, things up to date, makes a hell of a lot of difference, because the bad actors are after the easy targets, the low-hanging fruit. And there's so much that can be done by policy to make sure that you're, again, hard to kill, as I like to tell people. So a little bit of investment, but it is a knowledge thing that people need to get up to speed with. And then once they've got that, my recommendation is to checklist it. So come up with a checklist of what to enable, what to disable, what to set up, how to set it up. And then once you do a checklist, then the final step is to automate that, which, again, the checklist will make easy for you. So always my recommendation that security is around checklists and proving, you know, that the security that you're talking about, thinking about, is done in a consistent manner, and that makes all the difference. So that would be the aim. We can do that largely with things like PowerShell and other options in Office 365, Microsoft 365, and that will make life so much easier and more secure out of the box. And then we want to, again, make sure that we monitor that. Also, like tools like Azure Sentinel, which are coming into play as a central way to manage and monitor a lot of this sort of security requirements, especially for big companies and for little companies as well. So I think Azure Sentinel is a great tool and very inexpensive to actually go and start using in a basic form, at least anyway, to look at your cloud apps. So use those sort of things. I think I've mentioned cloud apps a couple of times. Azure Sentinel a few times in the shorter podcast, the FAQs that I've done. We'll look to do some more depth on that. Hopefully I can dig up somebody to come and speak about that in a bit more depth for us on an upcoming interview. I think that security is a big thing. And again, no matter what the situation, good, bad, or indifferent in the economy, we're going to have to keep focusing on it, make sure that we've got our systems tightly integrated and secured, because the attackers are always going to be there. We can't basically let our guard down or, again, cut the the price or the investment we make in security, because that's going to cost us so much more in the long run. So again, for those people out there, make sure that you do stay secure and keep on top of that, even no matter what the economy deals up for us. So I'm sure you'll be making sure that your customers are kept secure and up to date, no matter what we see out there happening in the general market, won't you, Brendan?
Oh, look, and it's the price of security is vigilance, and it's about having tough conversations sometimes, because, you know, security costs money, and sometimes it stands in the way of productivity, sometimes it helps productivity, you know, like you think of cloud and what sort of security that brings compared to the traditional on-prem. It also comes with productivity benefits, so that's an easy security conversation to have. When you're saying, oh, now you have to use multi-factor authentication, it's going to take you less, it's going to take more time to log into things. We're going to, you know, block your access if you access it overseas and not tell us first. Those sorts of things, executive leadership might be a little bit more keener to get onto those sorts of things because they understand the risk-based discussion, and particularly at a board level, they understand the risk-based discussion. But, you know, you might have a bit more of a challenge with people who see that as you getting in the way of them trying to do their work. So that's an interesting one. That leads on quite nicely to a shameless plug, if you don't mind, Robert.
Sure, this is your last episode. Make the most of it, Brendan.
So I did do an adoption podcast with a Office 365 partner. They do records management or something. I don't really understand it, and they wanted me to talk authoritatively not on that, thankfully. I got to talk about Office 365 adoption, so I just talked about basically the Microsoft, the gold standard, the playbook there from Microsoft that I've been, you know, knee deep in. I did my service adoption specialist certification last year. I got certified in that, which was cool, and just confirmed a lot of the stuff that I'd already learned and knew about. So I got invited to come onto this podcast and talk about that, which was kind of cool. So we'll leave a link in the podcast if you want to hear more from me around how you get people to use Office 365 before, after, during your rollout. And if you had any questions regarding that sort of stuff, or any feedback regarding one of my interviews, definitely let me know. It's a one-time thing. It's not an ongoing thing. You know, they're not as they're a bit more picky than Robert, so they just said, just an interview. But we might be able to get one of their guys. They had on their first episode, quite a good Power Automate techie sort of guy who had a really good idea of how all that stuff works. So I said, oh, can we have him on our podcast? They said, yeah, maybe we might be able to even get you the CEO. So I might have a couple of interviews coming up around that. But yeah, it was good fun, and would love you to check it out and give me any feedback if you had any.
All right, so make sure that is in the show notes, and we'll make sure the links we mentioned today are also in the show notes, please. By all means, send us some feedback, people you want to hear on the podcast, topics you want covered. If you have a topic that you'd actually like to come on and talk about, or again, know somebody in the industry that will be willing to come and speak, by all means, please contact us. You'll find the podcast at N2K Podcast on Twitter and Facebook, feedback@needtoknow.cloud. Again, you'll find Mr. Brenton at Contact Brenton on the Twitter, and myself at Director CIA also on the socials. So with that, I think we're done for this episode. Like I said, no interview for this time. We'll need to do some work and, again, line up some interviews for our next episode. Don't forget our shorter FAQs, which do a bit of a deep dive and aim to, again, be within 15 minutes and overcome our normal case of Brenton rambling on. So anything else, Brenton, to cover before we call it quits on this episode?
Nope, just forward your resumes through to Robert's email address directly.
Yeah, I don't think we'll find any podcasting people as attractive as you are. So luckily this is an audio medium. So once again, thank you everybody for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Microsoft 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selections available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.